Thriller Bees.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Ben Bernanke and big, big banks. The second letter of the alphabet proves first on the list of things on investors' minds. It's the morning open, and we ask the question, where's Wall Street? Dow is off about 10 points at this hour, about a tenth of a percent. NASDAQ off about 0.75%. The S&P 500 off just a few points, about a half a percent at this hour. Right now, European markets are mixed and Asian markets were mostly up. All right, Julie Neiman joins us live this morning from St. Louis. She's an analyst with Smith Moore & Company. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning.
So Ben Bernanke goes before a joint economic committee of Congress in mere moments, Julie. He's likely to touch on some key points, bank solvency, the broader economy. What does he need to say about banks to put minds at ease?
Well, probably the first thing is they've already declared it. The government says no bank will fail. So what that is going to do is banks will start lending to each other in a much more timely fashion. But Congress is going to be peppering with questions, okay, so how do we get them stabilized here? And that's where we're going to see the new solutions for what's going on.
And likely we'll see a lot of back and forth.
You bet.
All right, we're going to talk about these bank stress tests. And Julie, I'd like for you to stay on the line with us as we do that. Today, federal regulators are expected to tell banks about their final results. At the same time, reports say at least half of those banks need more capital to make it through the fallout. Here's Tamara Keith.
Along with the names we've already heard, like Bank of America and Citigroup, Wells Fargo and Regions Financial of Alabama are also reportedly on the list of banks in need of a better buffer. Jane DeRista is a political economist at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, and she has some ideas about how the banks should raise the cash they need.
I think that the government should put the pressure on them to begin selling businesses and parts of their conglomerates in the way that Citibank sold off its Japanese securities operations recently.
She thinks another taxpayer bailout would be a very bad thing. White House Press Secretary Robert Gibbs said yesterday the administration doesn't plan to go to Congress for more money.
I think everyone involved will be looking for banks to raise this through either private means or the selling of some assets.
The test results are scheduled for public release on Thursday, after the markets close. In Washington, I'm Tamara Keith for Marketplace.
All right, back with Julie Neiman right now on the line in St. Louis. Julie, if a lot of these big banks need more capital, what does that say about lending at these places?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, in addition to what they're going to sell off, they also need to sell all their loans and assets they never should have had. There are going to be some great bargains out there. But they're also clutching their capital in a death grip, and they're not doing any lending at this point. They need to retain the capital to make sure that their capital cushion is still intact there.
All right. Julie Neiman from Smith Moore & Company joining us this morning from St. Louis. Julie, thanks.
You bet.
I appreciate it. Listening to The Morning Report on Tuesday, May 5th, 2009, at marketplace.org. The World Health Organization is considering whether to call the swine flu a pandemic. Meantime, in Mexico, the outbreak's epicenter, officials say the flu is under control. After a five-day business shutdown, Mexico says it's ready to reopen for business. From the Americas desk at WLRN, Marketplace's Dan Gretsch reports.
The Mexican government says its five-day shutdown of schools, government, and business has contained the swine flu outbreak. The country will return to work tomorrow. Serena Vinter is a researcher at the Trust for America's Health.
They knew that they were going to pay an economic price, but I think they felt it was something that they had to do just to get a handle on things.
The business shutdown cost Mexico an estimated $150 million a day in lost productivity. Vinter says that pales in comparison to the potential cost of reopening too early.
This virus could sort of go underground and then 6 months later pop up and have mutated and become a much more virulent virus, and that's the real worry.
Vinter admits it's impossible to know whether Mexico really has the flu beat. We'll only know if Mexico reopened too early once it's too late to reverse course. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Amazon's Kindle and other digital book readers have become pretty popular. They've also helped revive the flailing book publishing industry. Now, newspaper and textbook publishers are looking for a similar bump from a larger Kindle, expected to be introduced this week. Janet Babin reports from the Marketplace Innovations Desk at North Carolina Public Radio.
You can read newspapers and magazines on most e-readers now, but the small screens can make it difficult. The new, bigger Kindle is expected to be loose-leaf sized and could be bendable. No matter how many bells and whistles, though, blogger Om Malik with GigaOM says e-readers won't halt sagging newspaper and magazine subscriptions. But he says academic journals and textbook publishers could get a boost from a larger digital reader.
I remember carrying around like a 4-pound chemistry book. I mean, if there was something like a Kindle, life would have been great.
The current Kindle costs about $370. That would make it an expensive gadget for many students. Amazon won't comment on the new Kindle, but the company has planned a news conference for Wednesday. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
The mafia may be going green. Prosecutors in Sicily are investigating a possible link between wind power and the mob. From the European desk in London, here's Stephen Beard.
Sicilian magistrates have launched a new investigation into organized crime. It's called Operation Wind. They suspect that local mafiosi have been building wind farms. Concern about climate change is unlikely to be the gangsters' main motivation. The EU offers generous grants for clean energy projects, and Italy has the highest guaranteed prices for green electricity. Mark Nichols of Environment Finance magazine.
You can see how it might be attractive for the mafia. Putting up wind farms depends on getting a nod from the local officials, who obviously can be influenced, bribed or blackmailed.
The mob's apparent interest in wind power has not brought much environmental benefit. Several of the suspect wind farms are standing idle due to poor construction. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
America produces more than 9 billion gallons of mostly corn ethanol each year. But how eco-friendly is that ethanol? Today, the Environmental Protection Agency proposed a way to measure the pollution generated in making renewable fuels, such as ethanol. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Jennifer Collins reports.
U.S. ethanol producers want you to hear this.
It's better for your environment because it's a renewable fuel that greatly reduces harmful tailpipe emissions.
The reality is that ethanol can be produced in good ways and it can be produced in bad ways.
Nathaniel Green is with the National Resources Defense Council. He says clearing farmland, using fertilizer, and refining ethanol creates pollution.
And we need a tool to go out and actually be able to tell which gallons are produced well and which gallons are produced poorly.
Recently, California became the first state to put out its own standards. Bob Dineen represents major corn ethanol producers. He says the EPA shouldn't mirror California's mandate.
As currently structured, the California Low Carbon Fuel Standard would represent a do not enter sign for Midwest ethanol.
The new EPA standard will determine whether Midwest ethanol grows or withers. I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
If you're like me, you cringe every time you get your cell phone bill. My plan with all the calling and texting I do rings up to about, $80 or $100 a month. But after hearing this next story, I don't feel so bad. If you want to talk on your mobile phone in Lebanon, it's going to cost you a small fortune. But as Ben Gilbert reports, some are trying to change that.
Lebanon's two cell phone companies are owned by the state. They're the second biggest moneymakers for the government, bringing in $1 billion a year. But it comes at a cost to everyday Lebanese, who pay an average 40 cents a minute, and that's just for local calls. Not surprisingly, only 30% of people here own a line, a very low number in the phone-crazy Middle East. Kamal Shahadi is in charge of regulating Lebanon's cell phone industry. He says it's a backwards system, one used by only three other countries in the world.
North Korea, Libya, and Cuba are hardly models of good telecommunications.
To push Lebanon's cell phone system into the 21st century, Shahadi's agency has lobbied to get the government to auction the networks to a private company. But that's been put on hold because of the financial crisis. So the agency has organized much smaller auctions online and at a posh hotel in Beirut for premier cell phone numbers. The Lebanese national anthem signaled the start of bidding. On the block were 33 unique cell phone numbers, like 7070-7070.
Last call at $450,000. Once, twice, last call,
Yes, you heard correctly. That's $450,000 for a phone number. The auction attracted deep-pocketed bidders from Lebanon and the oil-rich Arabian Gulf countries, all of whom were highly aware that social status here is reflected in your clothes, car, and cell phone number. But the auction did raise $2.5 million to improve Lebanon's mobile network. Ministry of Telecommunications official Gilbert Najjar says it's for a good cause.
If you're willing to put money into it, we're willing to have the whole community share in your vanity.
Najjar hopes this auction is just a prelude to a later auction which will privatize the networks. He says privatizing the companies will provide better reception, expand services, and lower prices for Lebanon's hard-hit consumers. In Beirut, I'm Ben Gilbert for Marketplace.
Today we're going to hear from the Treasury Department and its latest bond sale that could top $100 billion. But finding buyers won't be as hard as you might think. One reason is because many corporate bonds are literally turning into junk. That's hurting the economy and doing damage to a lot of portfolios. Here's Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson.
Corporate bonds are essentially IOUs that companies issue in exchange for cash. The borrowers are businesses of all kinds, from Macy's to Dr. Pepper to Rubbermaid. Marilyn Cohen of Envision Capital Management wrote a book called The Bond Bible.
The bond market is so much larger than the equity market. It is the lubricant of the world.
Right now, you won't be surprised to hear that lubricant isn't working as well as it used to. Diane Vaza is head of global fixed income research at Standard & Poor's, which rates bonds so investors know what they're buying. Vaza says in the first quarter, S&P downgraded 93% of the bonds it rates.
In my 30-year career, this is the worst, really, that we have seen in terms of corporate credit risk.
It's easy to figure out the reason, says Marilyn Cohen.
Many corporations are getting downgraded in their credit quality because business is terrible. Their earnings are down, their profits are down, their revenues are down, and their ability to make these timely interest payments is deteriorating faster than a speeding bullet.
That doesn't necessarily mean that all those downgraded companies will default on their debt or go out of business, just that many of them won't have the money to expand operations anytime soon. In fact, this wave of downgrading could trigger another round of layoffs because borrowing becomes much more expensive the lower the ratings go, says S&P's Diane Vaza.
You know, once they're downgraded, companies have been over the past year paid an average of 12.5% more.
The companies that fall from an investment grade rating to a junk rating are called fallen angels. In March alone, 17 borrowers joined that list. That's three times more than a typical month. Marilyn Cohen says for most of those companies, a reascent is unlikely.
If you happen to remember that commercial, "I've fallen, but I can't get up," when a company goes from investment grade to junk, they rarely crawl back to investment grade.
That's not just bad news for the company involved. It's also bad for some investors who are required to sell and probably take a loss when a bond is downgraded to junk. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
Earnings reports this morning. Kraft Foods profits up 10%, sales dipped. MillerCoors profits up 51% for the first quarter. And Archer Daniels Midland out of Illinois, third quarter profits there fell 98%. Latest from Wall Street, the Dow basically flat, S&P down about 0.5%, and the NASDAQ down about 0.75%. The latest at our website, marketplace.org. Hope you can join us there. Thanks for joining us here. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.